Greetings once again, America. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome to another edition of the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do take the events of the week and focus them through the lens of original thought, and you'll hear news here that you haven't heard before. And you'll hear news that you've heard about, but you'll hear a viewpoint, a worldview, if you will, that you haven't heard before, and I'm sure you'll be entertained and educated and maybe even edified as we dive in to the events of this tumultuous week here at the McBurney household. We've been joined by little Alexis Megan, and she is in the studio right now. And I would love nothing more than for her to start crying, but my wife disagrees. Takako says, no. We don't want her to start crying, we just stop that. So, we'll hope that little Alexis will mind her P's and Q's and good quality radio etiquette here. As we move forward with the broadcast, we're going to start with the epidemic, and it's something that we've all known about for years. We're going to focus down in Palm Beach County, Florida, from the Orlando Sun Sentinel, the epidemic of skinny white boys wearing saggy pants. Yes, and showing their jockey underwear and their lower torso and whatever it is that I don't understand it myself. But hey, I had an earring in high school, okay? So, I mean, I understand what it's all about. I want to focus on this epidemic that is plaguing the nation, nay, possibly even the world, at least the first world. And we're going to start in Palm Beach County. Apparently, a referendum banning saggy pants resulted in an ordinance which prohibited anyone from wearing pants below the waist, exposing skin or underwear. So this was a frontal assault on the epidemic of skinny white boys, I guess even fat white boys, wearing those baggy pants. And it's an epidemic that needed to be addressed. And I'm all for this ordinance. But this past week, Palm Beach County Judge Laura Johnson ruled to overturn Riviera Beach's saggy pants ordinance. And she ruled it unconstitutional to tell stupid skinny white punks that they shouldn't wear baggy pants. How that could be unconstitutional, I do not understand. But it's been overturned. And apparently, under the ordinance, offenders, participants in the epidemic of stupid skinny white boys wearing baggy pants, offenders were cited with a $150 fine for the first offense and $300 for the second offense. And it was considered a misdemeanor. Officials say that fewer than 20 people were caught with drooping pants while the ordinance was in effect. So the ordinance seemed to be somewhat effective, because I can assure you there was more than 20, whether fat or skinny, stupid white boys wearing those baggy pants before the ordinance. And the ordinance apparently was doing some good. And why am I for the ordinance? Well, I'm for some ordinances, and I went back into the Bible to find out if there was a basis for ordinances like this that address specific issues going on in the culture right then and there. And I found in the book of Leviticus, in the 21st chapter and verse number 5, it seems to me that the Lord God himself instituted an ordinance, and I'll just read. They shall not make any bald place on their heads, nor shall they shave the edges of their beards, nor shall they make any cuttings in their flesh. They shall be holy to their God and not profane the name of their God. He's talking about the children of Israel. Now, when we look at this today, make a bald place on our head, shave the edge of our beard, make a cutting in the flesh, we don't understand any of that. Because this was a particular ordinance issued by the Creator and Lord of the universe, God himself, that dealt specifically with what stupid, skinny, young Jewish punks were doing back then when they were giving in to the heathen pagan culture, which is what this whole baggy pants thing is about. It's what the whole nose ring thing is about, the tattoo in the lower back of a young teenage girl. It's all about the same thing. The devices that stretch out the earlobes. Have you seen these things? I mean, what's going on there? Tell me we don't need an ordinance against these types of behaviors. And I'll tell you you're wrong. And and even if it has to be an extra constitutional ordinance, I don't want to see this stuff, okay? And I don't think that any father who's worth his salt should allow his son to dress up like a derelict punk thief, thug, or whatever it is they're trying to do. I mean, hey, I didn't wear my earring in front of my dad, or he would have. Well, it wouldn't have been pretty, I can tell you that. In fact, I stopped wearing an earring when I went into the Marine Corps because that wouldn't have been pretty either. And, you know, in fact, when I was in boot camp, there was a guy named Gallegos. And back then, we weren't politically correct. We just called him Gallegos. And Gallegos had an earring when he arrived at the Marine Corps Recruit Depot in San Diego. Not a smart move, Mr. Gallegos, because when he showed up in the squad bay on the very first night of boot camp, which was very similar to hell, except there's a point to boot camp, and I'm sure it's not quite as bad as hell. But anyway, Gallego showed up with his ear all bandaged up, and apparently one of the drill instructors had not appreciated Mr. Gallegos' wearing of the earring there on the inaugural day of our boot camp experience. And somehow the earring, I think it got snagged on some clothing and was somehow torn out of Gallegos' ear. Anyway, Gallegos turned out to be quite a fine Marine and did a fine job, I'm sure. Where was I going with? Anyway, I'm for the ordinance, is what I'm saying, to stop the pandemic of white boys acting the fool. So there we go. Now, that was not the most important story of the week, and I know that, but I want to get right now to the most important story of the week. This is out of the International File. This week, lawmakers working on a new constitution in the Dominican Republic have voted overwhelmingly to protect life, specifying in the document that the right to life is inviolable from conception until death. That's right in the Constitution of the Dominican Republic. Praise the Lord, that's awesome. Now, this is an article from Bob Unruh out at WorldNet Daily. They do a great job out there. And Bob gives us the report. The vote was 167-32 in the national legislature, which was responding to pressure from international pro-abortion groups. And why were pro-abortion groups seeking to legalize abortion in the Dominican Republic? Was it to liberate women? No, it was because they have a business. They have a business and they want to build a clinic. They want to build a profit center there in the Dominican Republic where they can kill children and collect cash, not checks, not credit cards, but cash from confused and scared young girls who feel they need to kill their baby in order to preserve their life as they know it. They've been lied to, they've been deceived into thinking that killing your child is a better option than carrying a child to term and either putting it up for adoption or raise it yourself, for crying out loud. Anyway, a number of groups from the United States went down to the Dominican Republic, including Live Action San Jose, which had produced a video of an abortion, an actual video of an actual abortion, and made it available to several national television outlets in order to reveal the horrors of the actual abortion procedure to millions of Dominicans. That's just phenomenal. Phenomenal. You know, there was a video called The Silent Scream here in the United States about 25 years ago. 20 years ago? You can't find that video with a GPS anymore. It's been buried by the culture, the media. They would never allow a mass broadcast of an actual abortion so that Americans could see what it actually is. But in the Dominican Republic, it was done by Live Action San Jose. Awesome. Also, Faithful Soldier School of Evangelism and my friends at Personhood USA were in the Dominican Republic for about a month. They handed out over 50,000 articles about abortion to educate the Dominican citizens. Keith Mason of Personhood USA is quoted in the article. He says, "The people on the small Caribbean island understand that all life is precious and should be protected. We pray that America catches on soon." Some tremendous wisdom from a young man, Keith Mason, there. Just phenomenal. He did a great job. Mason told WorldNet Daily he spent about a month in the nation, and the Dominican Republic is among the nations leading in the protection of life. Quoting Keith Mason, "All the folks should visit a place like this and see what it does to a culture when abortion is illegal," he said. "It changes everything." Now, you'll remember, North Dakota's House of Representatives and the Montana Senate endorsed bills that declare the unborn child as a person protected by rights under the state constitution. The personhood approach, according to Bob Unruh at WorldNet Daily, the personhood approach within the pro-life movement was sparked by a statement in the 1973 Roe versus Wade decision that opened the doors for legal abortion in the United States. Isn't this shocking that this was actually in the decision? Listen to this. In the Roe versus Wade opinion, Supreme Court Justice Harry Blackmun wrote, quote, "If the suggestion of personhood of the fetus is established, the case, of course, collapses. The case for abortion collapses. For the fetus's right to life is then guaranteed specifically by the 14th Amendment." Harry Blackmun put it right there in the decision, and right-wing, conservative, and Christian people are awakened now to the truth of personhood and the fact that it will carry the day, and it's the only way to end abortion in America. And if you don't want to end abortion in America, you should probably turn this show off. Or actually, you should probably keep listening, because you will come around to our way of thinking eventually. Trust me. All right, now let's go and dive into further into the international file. Let's go down to Jamaica, man. Down in Kingston, Jamaica, Jamaica's government put police and the army on alert to prevent violent demonstrations as it prepared to announce a tax increase, man, on gasoline and cigarettes and other consumer items this past week, man. Can you believe it? So the folks down in Jamaica they're being taxed to death, just like everyone else in the Western world. And apparently the Jamaican government has had to actually deploy soldiers ahead of the announcement of these new taxes. And it's interesting, if you look through history, that high taxes have led to civil wars and conflicts between nations and general civil unrest and a disruption of domestic tranquility. How much taxation can we here in the United States absorb before we rebel? Well, what's interesting to me is that we've tolerated the slaughter of an entire generation of children. That's right. We've tolerated our children being educated to the point that they reject our traditional Judeo-Christian ethics. Our children have been taught they evolved from slime. They descended from apes. There is no right or wrong. There is no judgment day. There is no creator God. It's all just an accident. You're an animal. Here's a condom. Go have sex. That's what we have tolerated here in America for at least the 40 years that I've dwelt on the planet here in this nation. But perhaps it will be taxes. Perhaps it will be taxes that leads to a change. A peaceful change, I do hope, because I don't like to see anything like civil unrest, bloodshed, warfare. Don't want any of that. But change must come. And I'm not talking about the spare change that Barry Ho brings. I'm talking about real change. I'm talking about repentance. I'm talking about returning to the path, to the pursuit of the path of righteousness that we all should be dedicated to, as we have been blessed with a knowledge of the Creator God and His Word and His will. Every one of us, whether you claim to be an atheist or not, your conscience was enlightened at your conception, and you cannot deny it. And to deny it is a crime against humanity. But perhaps in America, it'll be the checkbook that dictates the revolution. All right, now, do I want to do the... I don't really want to do this. Oh, here we go. Jack Napolitano. There's an article here about Homeland Security Secretary Big Jack Janet Napolitano. Do I call her Big Jack or Big John? It was Jack. Jack was Janet Reno. This is Janet Napolitano. Wow, I just blew my own mind, because when you think of Janet Reno and Janet Napolitano, it's disturbing. It's disturbing. Anyway, I saw the headline that Napolitano had been asked about testing, and you know that I've demanded a DNA test to determine the sex of Janet Napolitano. But this, this was very disappointing because once I read the article, it's about the flu epidemic or possible flu epidemic, and the fact that U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Big John Napolitano said on Sunday, quote, "Right now, we don't think the facts warrant more active testing or screening of passengers coming from Mexico in regards to the possible swine flu epidemic." So I'm a little disappointed. There's no DNA test in the offing with Big John Napolitano, but we will continue to call for it here on the Weekly Worldview because we truly believe here that Americans have a right to know. It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm Doug McBurney, and I'm so glad to have you with us again. All right. And ladies and gentlemen, it has just been a wonderful, fabulous week. We came off of Resurrection Sunday last week. It was just phenomenal. We had an awesome sunrise service out at our church, and it was just phenomenal. And, of course, then the arrival of little Alexis. It's just been fantastic. And we've been really up and motivated and high on life, and especially about kids, because we've got our own new little kid, and it's just fantastic. But I can tell you that the baby boom generation, and they even my generation, the Generation X, as we were referred to, are not handling their children very well. Back into the international file here, this is a story from the London Telegraph. There's a project that's being trialed across North Wales to tackle antisocial behavior on school buses. And when I read that, I thought, okay, I've got an idea. Give the bus driver a big wooden paddle, and the next time one of these punks is antisocial or mean or cruel or starts beating up or just making fun of a kid or just acting the fool, acting like one of these punks down in Palm Beach County with his saggy pants, have the bus driver take the kid and give him a spanking. That seems like a very good way to tackle antisocial behavior on the school buses, but no, that's not what's happening in Wales. Pupils will use a picture swipe card to clock on and off the bus, allowing parents to keep closer check on their child via a website. So apparently, ignorant, stupid parents can now, I don't know, dial up a website and see a dot representing where their kid is on the bus, and then I guess if other dots encircle their dot, and I guess they can call the police, or I don't know what this is all about. But hey, what's a liberal to do? You know, these people are not going to realize, or they're not going to admit, that the entire culture against corporal punishment for children is one of the biggest mistakes we've ever made, and it could cost us our very civilization as an entire generation of youth grows up uncivilized. They don't want to admit that. They'd rather slap a GPS on the kid and, well, hey, we'll try to track him so that at least when he's killed and thrown from the bus, his parents will know where he is. It's just bizarre. And this whole thing about bullying, you know, this is something I've thought about for a long time, because this whole idea about bullying, I was bullied as a kid because I was a skinny kid, skinny little kid, and I was a smart mouth punk, boy, I tell you what. And I was bullied and beaten up, and sometimes I didn't deserve it. Sometimes I did. Most of the time, in fact, I did. But that's just my particular case. I think there are a lot of kids who just look different. They wear glasses. They have braces. They're overweight. They got pimples. Whatever it is, they have something that causes other rotten, mean little bastards to come and make fun of them and beat them up and treat them bad. And it's not really bullying. It's wickedness. These are kids being evil and wicked toward other kids. It's just wickedness. And to cordon it off in its own little section and call it bullying, I think is to avoid the real topic of the fact that our public schools, whether here or in London or in England or Wales or wherever, the public schools have basically become a Lord of the Flies experiment where, you know, the weak are tortured and tormented by the strong and the mean. and it's wickedness. And it's just like any other wickedness. I mean, the great dictators of history who slaughtered and killed and destroyed civilizations and murdered women and children, they were, I suppose you could call them bullies, but I say they were wicked. Just plain wicked, that's all it's about. Let's call it what it is, and let's solve it. What children need is discipline. They need a knowledge of God. They need to understand that there's a creator and that they'll be held accountable on Judgment Day. And every once in a while, they need a smack, all right, when they're young, so that we can program it into their little brain housing groups that when you do something bad, there's pain associated with that. When you put another little kid in pain because you're a rotten punk, well, guess what? We're going to put you in pain. And that way, they grow up with some idea of the reality that wickedness is counterproductive and destructive. And there's a price to be paid for it. But instead, they're strapping GPSs, and they're calling it bullying, and they're setting up counseling sessions. And even this week, CNN's been following these two stories about these two 10, 11-year-old boys who, within the space of 2 weeks, these are two public school students who were tortured and tormented by wicked, rotten children, other children in their public school, to the point where they hung themselves. Two 10, 11-year-old boys, within the space of a couple of weeks, hung themselves at their homes as a result of what CNN calls bullying, what I call wickedness. And you know, the funny thing about CNN is all they can seem to talk about is the fact that the other kids called these boys gay. They called them gay. And I've noticed this in our neighborhood. We've got some public school thugs who live in the neighborhood. And whenever they're trying to insult each other, they call each other gay. Well, that's gay, or you're gay. That's what I've heard. That's gay. You know, something that's bad, that's gay. And isn't it bizarre that while the entire culture and the educational elite have done all they can to inculcate the idea into the minds of these boys that being homosexual, being gay is good, it's to be celebrated, it's diverse, it's wonderful, it's probably better than what your parents and your grandparents did, you should try it. Despite all that, when kids talk about something that's bad or they want to insult another kid, they call him gay. And it's really got nothing to do with the idea that these two boys that CNN, that Anderson Cooper particularly is obsessed with. It's got nothing to do with the fact that students actually thought they were homosexual. Let's just clear that up right now. They were just calling him gay. While they were calling them stupid or ugly or fat or skinny or pimple face or four eyes, it's just the same wickedness, okay? But I have a feeling, and specifically regarding Anderson Cooper, if you've listened to the show, you know that here at the McBurney household, we don't allow Fox News in the house because we don't allow pornography in the house. That's been a long-standing rule. We get our news straight from CNN, straight from the liberal horse's mouth. With no sugarcoating, it is straight-on, solid, liberal news. Because we have to keep an eye on what the enemy's doing. So we watch Anderson Cooper from time to time, and I've been ambivalent about where Anderson Cooper comes down in the sexual preference area, if you want to put it politely. But I can tell now that because Anderson is so focused on the gay angle of this issue of these two boys who were tortured in their public schools and hung themselves, all he wants to talk about is the fact that these boys were called gay. And I have a feeling, and this is just another one of my theories, that when it comes to homosexuality, once you go that way, maybe that's all you can think about after that. I mean, it's like a permanent scar on your psyche or something. That's all you can think about. You're obsessed with it. That's why Anderson Cooper can't stop talking about the fact that these two poor kids were called gay. And that's why the homosexuals want to get married and they want to march in public and they want to take over the universe because they're just obsessed with it. So there must be something that like snaps inside your brain when you do things like that. And Anderson Cooper looks like a fine example proving or at least mitigating in favor of my theory. That once you do something like that, you're literally obsessed with it for the rest of your life. All right, but enough of that. Now, I want to come back from the international file briefly to Washington, and I want to talk about Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. It hurts to even say that, But that's where we are, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the United States of America circa 2009. Wake up, rub the sleep out of your eyes. Hillary Clinton is the Secretary of State. I want to move to the Dominican Republic. It's just depressing. Anyway, Hillary this week cautioned, according to a Reuters story, cautioned Israel's right-wing government on Thursday that it risked losing Arab support for fighting any threat from Iran if it shuns Palestinian peace talks. Now, first of all, where did Reuters get the idea that Israel has a right-wing government? I mean, come on. I suppose if the government dinner parties, the dinner parties being held, the state dinners, if they're being held by the government and there aren't queers swinging from the chandeliers, then I guess you're right wing. That's all it takes these days. I've been to Israel and I've followed Israeli politics. The Israeli government is anything but right wing, but let's leave that aside. Hillary's apparently signaling her impatience with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. He appears to be a bit reticent over peace talks with the Palestinians. And Clinton said that Arab nations had made clear to her that Israel must be committed to the Palestinian peace process if it wants help countering Iran. Let's quote, in fact, we have tape from Hillary. For Israel to get the kind of strong support it's looking for vis-a-vis Iran, it can't stay on the sidelines with respect to the Palestinians and the peace efforts. They go hand in hand. That's what she told the House of Representatives recently. Now, Israel, as we know, sees, you know, the nukes in Iran is something that Israel, a number of people at the highest echelons of government, said they will not tolerate. And since coming into power last month, according to Reuters, Netanyahu and his right-leaning coalition have avoided recognizing the Palestinians' right to an independent state. Now, that's a little more accurate on the part of Reuters. His right-leaning coalition, yeah, I don't know. They're so far to the left that, you know, even to lean right is not very impressive, but that's where Israel is. You know, but even left-wing socialists like the Israeli government, at least they have some concept that a nuclear Iran would mean the end of their cushy socialist lifestyle. And so hopefully they're going to bomb those guys. Now, but what I wanted to get at with Hillary Clinton there, I wanted to quote Hillary because this brings to mind another theory of mine that I've been developing, and that's the theory of the undead reanimatrons. That's right. Now, you may not have heard about this before, but it's something I've been pondering and something that I've thought about seriously for at least 15 years. I think there's a possibility that somewhere on the planet there's a mad scientist who's actually keeping politicians who are dead alive with some type of drug concoction. And I don't know, I started to conceive this theory when I first saw Pat Schroeder on television. Because my first instinct was to think that this is a dead person. But then she started talking and she moved her arms and, you know, she read through some papers and I thought, well, wait a minute. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe she's alive. And I struggled with this all through Pat Schroeder's career. And I've developed this theory now over time, and I believe primarily this mad scientist is controlling politicians within the Democratic Party, although there have been some Republicans that I could associate with it. I won't do it here today, but there's been something of an evolution going on in the mad scientist experiments. You know, he's using some combination, you know, a little methadrine, a little scotch, a little Ambien, keeps them animated so that they appear to be alive, but they're actually dead. I mean, witness the evolution. I mean, you all saw Nancy Pelosi and with the blinking that's going on. Now, Pat Schroeder never opened her eyes at all. So the mad scientist had made some progress. He's got Pelosi up there, but she blinks as if she's looking into a wind tunnel or something. But, you know, he's making progress. And, you know, the mad scientist, he lost the teeth with Barney Frank. I mean, the teeth didn't make it through the process for whatever reason. We don't know. And by the way, this is all just a theory, but I see that there's an evolution in these reanimatrons who are actually dead, but they're being animated by some evil guy with a concoction of drugs, and they're running the country and running the world to the rim of hell, frankly. And when you consider the theory in a spiritual sense, well, then the theory is more than likely true, at least spiritually, if not physically. Yeah, Pat Schroeder, you remember her? Whatever happened to her? Whatever happened to Pat Schroeder? You know what? I think that I have not heard, as far as I know, I haven't heard that she died. Is it possible that she's still being animated by the mad scientist somewhere? Wasn't she working for a publishing house or something? What we need to do is get our crack staff on that and see if the mad scientist has found a way to open Pat Schroeder's eyes. It's a monster. It's a monster. It's a monster. Welcome back to the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney, coming to you on a beautiful rainy night here in Denver, Colorado. We're so happy that it's raining and it's not snowing, although there's a chance that the rain will turn to snow in the morning. But now I've digressed to talking about the weather, something I vowed I would never do. Because what do you care about the weather in Denver, Colorado? Let's go down to Guatemala City. From the Reuters Wire, Guatemala has banned motorcyclists from carrying passengers in an attempt to crack down on drive-by murders by gunmen perched on the back of motorbikes. Try to process that for 5 seconds, okay? I mean, it's like the old George Carlin joke that a man got on a bus, shot five people, transferred to a crosstown bus, and shot three more. In response, the city has discontinued the transfer process. I probably didn't do that joke as well as Mr. Carlin did, but it's that bizarre. You've got, down in Guatemala City, apparently, the gangsters, when they do their drive-by shootings, they have a passenger on the back of their motorbike, they zip up beside the target, and the passenger shoots and kills or injures the target, the person. Well, to combat this, the Guatemalan government, no doubt under the direction of the United Nations, and perhaps Nancy Pelosi and the mad scientist who animates her, have decided to make a law stating that you cannot have a passenger on your motor scooter. It's just bizarre. Now, this signature murder technique was used recently to murder a prominent Guatemalan, including several prominent Guatemalans, in fact, including a television reporter and the former director of the National Chamber of Industry. And so instead of publicly executing gangsters that either murder or threaten to murder people, that would be a way to eliminate these drive-by shootings, would be swift public execution of people who do such things. But instead they've banned passengers on motorbikes, and we'll just move on from that because that's frankly just embarrassing. Now, diving into the culture file here in the United States, the Presbyterians here in the month of April have been voting on whether to allow homosexuals to serve as clergy in the Presbyterian church. Yeah, that's right. You remember, now I was just in, wasn't I just in the book of Leviticus? Let me go back there here. Let's see here. I was in Leviticus. I can't remember if it was in Leviticus, Exodus, Deuteronomy, or Numbers, where God gave the command, thou shalt call a convocation of the people once a year to vote on my law. Maybe it's in Exodus. I'm going to have to go back and research that, where that was in the Bible. I'll try to bring that next week. But apparently, the Presbyterians are voting on which laws they want to pay attention to. And when I say which laws, we understand that there is some controversy within the Christian church over the position of the law. What is the law today? What laws do we need to obey? Do we need to obey any law? Are we under the law? And I don't want to get into a whole theological thing, but there are four eternal moral laws that have never been revoked. And those four moral laws, you shall not steal, you shall not lie, you shall not murder, you shall not commit adultery. Those four are the foundation of every justice system in every civilized part of the world. And those are laws that every human government is commanded by God to uphold and to enforce and to defend the innocent against the violation of these laws. And you shall not commit adultery. Homosexuality is just another form of adultery because it's unbridled lust and it's a sin. In fact, God calls it abomination and it was punishable by death under the Hebrew law. And it's a crime. It's definitely a crime. So the Presbyterians have decided that they're going to vote on whether or not they're going to let criminals serve as clergy in their church. And the measure apparently has failed. So the conservatives there in the, what's left of the conservatives in the Presbyterian church, have defeated the idea of allowing criminals to serve in their clergy, but the vote gets closer and closer every year. And it's really a fine example of what happens to institutions, whether it be the Presbyterian Church or Harvard University or the United States of America. Everything founded with an eye towards serving God and honoring Him tends to break down over time and eventually gets rotten and has to be put out of its misery. Everything, every institution. Eventually, because institutions are inhabited by fallen human beings who eventually serve their own belly rather than the living God. It happens. And it's happening to the Presbyterians, and that's just sad. Now, let's move on deeper into the culture file out in Iowa. The Attorney General... Now, you remember what happened in Iowa. They legalized gay marriage, and that doesn't mean marriage between happy people. That means marriage between homosexual people. Iowa Attorney General Tom Miller is warning the county recorder's offices in his state that workers must process marriage licenses for same-sex duos or face possible charges in a court of law. You see, the Attorney General there is concerned that there might be some people working in the government who issue the actual marriage licenses who are Christians or not even Christians, just not insanely wicked, stupid, evil people that would allow queers to get married. You don't even have to be a Christian to realize that homosexual marriage will destroy the entire civilization. It will. I mean, think about it, folks. If half the people go queer, what's going to happen? The population is going to die out, folks. I mean, it's just that simple. You don't even have to be a Christian. You just have to be a halfway intelligent person who can look at reality and have some perception about the consequences of actions. So the Iowa Attorney General is concerned that there might be some people who haven't drank the Kool-Aid, who haven't been animated by the mad scientist, who are saying, well, wait a minute, I'm not going to issue a marriage license to a homosexual couple. I'm not going to contribute to the end of my own civilization, to the destruction of my nation. I've got kids, I got grandkids. I'm not going to issue this. Well, the Attorney General has sent out a prophylactic warning telling them, you better do it or you'll lose your job. He says, if necessary, we'll explore legal actions to enforce and implement the court's ruling, working with the Iowa Department of Public Health and the county attorneys. The Iowa Department of Public Health? I'm not sure why they would be involved. I suppose anytime you got a pile of homos who want to get married, you better call in the Department of Health. Anyway, the Attorney General says, and I quote, and this is, by the way, this story is from Bob Unruh over at WorldNet Daily as well. He does a great job. The Attorney General of Iowa, Tom Miller, says, quote, we must live by and follow what the courts decide. And the guy is, I need to check into this guy and find out what is his prescription situation. I mean, you heard me. I called for drug tests for all government officials a few weeks ago on the show, but now I'm concerned that they're actually the undead, because nobody could think that you're going to live by and follow this court's decision. He should say, we're going to allow our culture to die by this court's decision, because that's what's going to happen to your culture when you start allowing homosexuals to disgrace, violate, and corrupt the institution of marriage, which doesn't come from the government, by the way. It comes from God. It was hilarious. I was driving the other day, listening to the radio. There's a lawyer who has a radio show here in Denver. Some Christian guy calls him up and says, you know, where does marriage come from? And this lawyer, he probably talked for a minute and a half before he mentioned that there is a religious component. And I just sat there and I thought, am I living in an insane, backwards, bizarro world? Where does marriage come from? The first thing, it's right there in the very beginning of Genesis. And I'm sure a number of other religious traditions, but in the very beginning of Genesis, he made the male and female. The man will leave his mother and father and cleave unto his wife. I mean, for lawyers or anyone in the government, or even anyone, to deny that the idea of marriage, the institution of marriage, comes from our Creator, comes from religion. If you can't have the nerve to say Creator, I know lawyers have a hard time with that idea that there's a Creator God who will be the judge of the world. They have a problem with that. But even to just be able to say that it comes from a religious idea is just bizarre to me. You got to be careful, folks. You got to be careful. And for those of you in the audience who are Christians, I want to go to 1 Corinthians chapter 3, starting in the 11th verse. This is our scripture for the day. Warning, warning, Will Robinson, there are Bible verses up ahead. For those of you in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would not tolerate to have anyone quote a Bible verse in public, so this warning gives you notice that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, starting in the 11th verse, for no other foundation can anyone lay than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ. Now if anyone builds on this foundation with gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, or straw, each one's work will become clear, for the day will declare it, because it will be revealed by fire, and the fire will test each one's work of what sort it is. If anyone's work which he has built on it endures, he will receive a reward. If anyone's work is burned, he will suffer loss, but he himself will be saved, yet as though through fire.
Look at us. After all these years together, look at us. After all that we've been through.
It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm Doug McBurney, coming to you with soothing, smooth sound. Still across the internet broadcast. So good to have you with us. My extremely attractive audio engineer must be feeling a bit romantic. My mom and dad, my dad anyway, love this song. Yep, says it reminds him of him and my mama. There you go. You just sing it. Man. Let's go back to 1 Corinthians. But he himself, talking about the Christian who builds upon the foundation of Christ, but he himself will be saved, yet so as through fire. It's kind of a scary verse, because as Christians, we know that there is no wrath of God that's being stored up for us, because we're forgiven. But don't think you're going to skate on Judgment Day, okay, fellow Christian? You need to think about this. Have an eternal perspective, because the things you do in this life will be revealed on Judgment Day, and there's going to be some things that you and I are ashamed of, and things that even make us cry, things that even break our hearts, that will be revealed on Judgment Day. And I think it has a lot to do with the people we know, the people who we came in contact with, who go to hell and who are separated from God and separated from us forever. We're going to suffer loss. We're going to be saved ourselves, but it'll be as if we were dragged through a fire. That's how bad it's going to hurt on Judgment Day. But there's another verse. I can't pull it up right now, but it does say that Christ will wipe away all our tears. And thank heaven for that. But let's keep that eternal perspective, folks. I put that verse right in the middle of my stack of stories, and it seemed like it fit just fine. Alan Keyes, now that's good. You go from the Apostle Paul to Alan Keyes. That's a smooth transition every time. Alan Keyes wrote an article. Apparently, he read a passage from a book called Conversations with God by a guy named Neil Walsh. And I'll just read the section from the book, and then we'll see what Alan Keyes has to say about it. This is from Conversations with God by Neil Walsh. Another question asks about God's forgiveness of sin. God's reply, I do not forgive anyone because there is nothing to forgive. There is no such thing as right or wrong, and that is what I have been trying to tell everyone. Do not judge people. People have chosen to judge one another, and this is wrong, because the rule is, judge not, lest ye be judged. And Alan Keyes says, I'd be tempted to think Walsh meant this as a joke, but this kind of silliness is typical of the shallow nonsense that passes for spirituality these days. Now, this book by Walsh, apparently, according to Alan Keyes, this is one of Oprah Winfrey's particular favorites. And so he says this kind of junk is real popular in the Oprah slash Obama set. And what Alan Keyes points out is so key. He says, I was struck by the self-evident contradiction that has Walsh's God saying there is no such thing as right or wrong in one breath, and judging is wrong in the next. Obviously, Walsh's God has no problem applying a concept while declaring that it does not exist. Thank God for Alan Keyes. What a great guy. Fantastic writer. Even better speaker. If you ever get a chance to see him in person, he will make you believe that there is hope for Western civilization if you hear a speech by Alan Keyes. I'll tell you that. Now that brings to mind, since I've been talking about Alan Keyes and we even quoted scripture, the Miss America story. Okay, I missed it. I want to repent. I want sackcloth and ashes here, okay, folks? I missed the big story there, but I think everyone else has too. The big story surrounding Miss America, and I know it's not Miss America, it's Miss California, but who really cares? Anyway, the whole pageant is stupid. The idea of Miss America is ridiculous. But Miss California, Miss Prejean, she is a shining example of the fact that God influences people's spirits, even to this day. Because Miss Prejean, in my opinion, and I have no way of knowing this, but I bet that growing up and even as an adult, she has had some exposure to the church. She's probably even cracked open a Bible once or twice and read through just a few verses. And when she got up there on stage and she was asked that question by that flaming homosexual judge, when she was asked that question about homosexual marriage, she began with the rehearsed, politically correct line that she knew she had to give to preserve her opportunity for the crown. But at some point after she said it was wonderful that we could choose between straight or opposite or gay or whatever it was she was babbling about, something stirred in her spirit, and she just couldn't go on. She couldn't complete the thought. She had to stop and say, but you know, in my house where I grew up and the way I believe is that marriage is between one man and one woman. And now, that was an example of that still small voice that God tells us is within each and every one of us. And that should be the focus of the story, is that Miss America couldn't get past the still small voice. Now, she didn't acquit herself all that well, but that often happens when the still small voice has to stir inside of you. Typically, you don't say something brilliant. You don't say something memorable. You typically say something stupid and you stumble all over yourself and you're fairly embarrassing. But there's hope in that still small voice. And that really is the story of the Miss California homosexual marriage event. Is that the still small voice still exists. And while we may be trained and conditioned to resist it by the culture, it can still break through. And so there is hope. And so I think that I'm sorry that I made fun of her last week. I think. I'll have to think about it some more. But because her statement was not biblically correct, and I think she had claimed to somehow say she wanted to be biblically correct, I jumped on her and made fun of her. But I think we need to bear with her. Okay, and let's hope that she stops the whole stripping in front of large audiences thing, and that she actually does become biblically correct, because she is proof that there is there is hope, and there yet remains a still small voice that could wake even our stupefied and drug-addled nation back to repentance. It is possible. Now, into the domestic tranquility file, we're going to go through these quickly. A Dateline Athens, Georgia, from CNN. A University of Georgia professor apparently shot his wife and two other people at a community theater group this Saturday past. It appeared, according to police, that he and his wife were having problems. So my gut on this story is there's sexual immorality involved. I don't know much more about it, but that's just my gut. Dateline, Hampton, Virginia. Hampton police and Hampton University school officials confirmed that there was a shooting on campus. It happened in Harkness Hall, a freshman dorm, around 12:30 in the morning, just this Sunday past. Hampton police tell WAVY-TV that an 18-year-old Richmond man entered the dorm and shot two men, a 62 and a 43-year-old man, both from Hampton. He then turned the gun on himself. According to the article, the three men were transported to local hospitals where they are currently being treated for their injuries. So, two things here. First of all, this guy's not a very good shot. He even turned the gun on himself, and he's in the hospital being treated for his injury. So, not a good shot. Okay, that I guess goes without saying, and perhaps I shouldn't have even said it. But the second thing is, folks, if you're thinking about sending your kids to college, the chances of this happening are minimal, that they'll be shot in their dorm room. But the chances that they will contract some horrible lifelong disease at a spring break party in Mazatlan, or that they will be raped, or that they will be brutalized, or they will be tortured by evil, wicked young people is 100% guaranteed that one of those things will befall your child if you send them to public university. Or a private university, frankly. Just any institution these days, I've decided that I'm going to do all I can to keep my kids out of the institutions. I don't want my kids institutionalized. Because the institutions are so degraded and so wicked that they can only harm your child. And it's not worth the diploma. Anyway, the university, Hampton University there in Virginia, they evacuated the entire dorm. They sent a text message out, though. It said there's been a shooting at Harkness Hall. The suspect has been apprehended and the campus is safe. That's not true. The campus is not safe. Maybe from that particular shooter, but the campus is not safe. Dateline, Iowa City, Iowa. Police in this college town say there's been a dramatic rise in unprovoked beatings in the downtown area next to the University of Iowa over the last several months. Though the mix of young people and alcohol often leads to fighting, police say the intense violence and random nature of the attacks have them worried. Several things have happened just in the past month. March 27th, the college-age man is assaulted downtown, 6 to 10 men ganged up on him, beat him to a pulp, knocked him unconscious. April 22nd, a 20-year-old man was smoking outside a downtown bar. Six men approached him, asked him for cigarettes, and as he was handing them out, the men knocked him to the ground and took the whole pack. Later, the same man walked past a group of men who knocked him to the ground and stole his watch. And then there's other incidents, and you can just read the list here. Basically, beatings, random beatings that appear to be random. Police have stepped up late-night patrols downtown. They're trying to do what they can to get a handle on this. And the Iowa City Iowa City City Council is considering a measure backed by a planning commission that would require future bars to be 500 feet apart and ensure 1,000 feet between liquor stores. Okay. Did these guys come out of the Guatemalan government? I mean, where did they get this? What, the 500 feet between a liquor store is going to prevent... You know, how about disciplining your children, teaching them that there is a God, teaching them that they will be judged at the end of their life for what they've done, teaching them to love their neighbor? No, the educational elite will never admit that it's their humanist-based education and culture that's causing young people to literally explode with violence. That it literally causing them to explode. All right. Let's see here. Do I want to do any of the political stories? Let's see. Oh, well, I'll do one story from the politics file, but the rest of it I'm going to throw away because I just don't care. Dateline Detroit from NBC, the Treasury Department is preparing a Chapter 11 bankruptcy filing for Chrysler that could come as soon as this week. Didn't you and I and everyone else just give Chrysler, I don't know, $50 billion, $20 billion? Didn't we give them several $1 billion? And now they're going to let them go bankrupt? I mean, couldn't we have done this 6 months ago? And then we'd be 6 months past the bankruptcy? Anyway, I feel like I'm getting robbed, okay, on this deal. And I happen to drive a Chrysler vehicle. I know. And it's not that I'm a masochist or that I'm just living on the edge gambler type of guy. I decided to give American vehicles a chance. I've been buying Japanese cars. The first car I ever bought was, I was in the service in Japan and I bought a Japanese car, a Corsa. I never changed the oil. I never looked under the hood. I never did anything. I drove it for a year and a half, and I would have driven it longer, but one of my fellow Marines borrowed it from me and drove it into a wall. Anyway, the car was literally, I mean, you put gas in it, you just go. I drove it into the ground. Well, he drove it into the ground, actually, into a wall. But anyway, I've always had good luck with Japanese cars, have several Japanese cars, trucks, always done well. I decided to buy a Chrysler product. I got a Charger because I thought it looked cool, if you can believe that. Talk about the quintessential midlife moron move. 40 years old, he goes out and buys a Charger. Anyway, I've made it past the I've made it past 18,000 miles. I've made it past my sixth oil change without a single problem. And so I'm hoping that I'm over the hump on that. We'll see. But if Chrysler goes belly up, I don't know. I don't have to worry because Barack Obama will come over and change the oil on my car. Something like that. But anyway, I feel like I'm getting robbed. All right, but it's not that big a deal because I've got so much joy in my life that I can't be depressed about the fact that they just stole a bunch of money, gave it to Chrysler, and now they're going to go bankrupt. Because let me tell you about my two-year-old daughter, who I think is quite possibly a genius, okay? And let me tell you why. We're potty training her, and my wife is homeschooling at the same time, okay? Which is a lot of fun. A few nights ago, we're sitting at the dinner table, and she's drinking her milk, and she says, "Mama, I see pee." And this is potty training week, so my wife assumes, oh, she's got to pee, and grabs her, takes her to the bathroom, sits her down, and nothing happens. And the child doesn't have to pee, and my wife comes back confused. All right, puts her back. Finish your dinner now. She takes another big glass of drink of milk, and she says, "Daddy, I see pee." So now it's on me. Okay, all right, we're potty trained. All right, pick her up, take her to the bathroom, sit her down, nothing happens. She's babbling on about something completely unrelated to urination, which is what we're looking for at this point. Anyway, I bring her back to the dinner table, and by this time, we're a little frustrated. "Zoe, stay in your chair. Finish your dinner. You're not going to pee until after dinner. Stop that." Well, she finishes her meal. She goes off, and I notice that she didn't quite finish her milk. She left just a little bit in the bottom of the glass. So I pick it up, as I want to do, and I swig down the last swallow of milk, and I notice in the bottom of the glass, engraved there by the manufacturer of the glass, is the letter P. The letter P is at the bottom of her glass. When she tipped up her milk, she was saying, "Daddy, I see P." And indeed, she did see P. She wasn't being difficult. She was being brilliant because she already knows her alphabet, and she doesn't have any problem in the urination area either, I'm proud to say. She's doing quite well on that. And we're just blessed. All right. So I will say farewell to you. I want to thank my friends at American Right to Life for what they do. Thank my friends at KGov Radio, KGOV.com. Check them out. I want to thank the folks at Denver Bible Church, as always, and our good friends at Personhood USA for the work that they do. The fabulous folks at the website, Theology Online, just a phenomenal bunch of folks. Some great things going on there. And of course, as always, I want to thank my other brother, Daryl, for making it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll be back with you next week. Until then, may the grace of our Lord go with you, and may His peace be upon you.